Welcome to The Dreaming. I'm Sasha Smulders.
I'm Joe Fulgham. This is The Sandman, Issue 52, World's End, Clurrican's Tale. A few notes on the cover. It's done by Dave McKean, as all the Sandman covers are. It consists of photography, collage, acrylic, and Macintosh use. There is a note, though, the Polaroid on the front. Do you know what that is a Polaroid of?
No.
It's kind of hard to tell. And those of you who are reading this in a collected trade paperback, it probably doesn't have the cover in front of the story. You've got to go to the front, and it's actually quite small. But the Polaroid on this cover is actually a mild spoiler because it's the cover of next issue.
Neat.
Yeah. And it's not a spoiler because you can't tell anything. But once you see the cover of issue 53, you'll notice that this is a Polaroid of that cover.
Oh. What does it say in the halo of writing above him? It's hard to read. Time, an endless song. Time teaches all the... Then it blanks out. Things almighty. Time disquiets Sophocles. And pluck till time and times are done. The silver apples of the moon. Another line, just because they're like kind of cut off all over the place. Experience treacherous, that's cut off, of life and life times fool, and nine that take survey of the world.
That line is from The Song of Wandering Angus by William Butler Yeats. This is the third stanza of it, the final stanza as well. Though I am old with wandering through hollow lands and hilly lands, I will find out where she has gone and kiss her lips and take her hands and walk among long dappled grass and pluck till time and times are done the silver apples of the moon, the golden apples of the sun.
It just has the and pluck till time, but the line before it is not the same. A time to kill, a time to heal, a time to break down, and a time to... This is just a bunch of... You know what it is? There are a bunch of lines, famous lines about time.
Okay.
I see no reason why thou shouldn't be superfluous to demand the time of... And then it cuts out.
Okay.
And nine that takes the survey of the world. Let me see. Come what may...
You are reading it way better than I ever did.
I think it's a whole bunch of quotes about time.
Yeah, I think you're right. Okay, well, should we get inside?
Yeah.
I've got the credits for this. Now, there are two sets of artists. There's the outer story penciler and inker. The penciler is Brian Talbot. The inker is Mark Buckingham. The inner story, that's the Clurrican's Tale, is penciled and inked by John Watkiss. It's all colored by Daniel Vazo. Todd Klein is the letterer. Karen Berger is the editor, and Shelley Bond is the associate editor, and of course, writer Neil Gaiman. So do you remember your prediction from the last episode?
I do not.
You predicted, because you did know that it was called Clurrican's Tale, that it would be a story of Clurrican, and I said, okay, yes, yes, but what is it going to be about? What happens in it? And you said it's going to follow the plot of either The Hangover or Weekend at Bernie's.
I mean, there was a little bit of Weekend at Bernie's at the end of this one.
I know there was. I remembered that when you mentioned it. I said necromancy would count. But you said The Hangover or Weekend with Bernie's, but with elves.
Yeah.
I mean, not elves. He's an elf and Nada is kind of a fairy, I guess. But I think the elf thing missed.
Yeah.
But there's a decent half-point hit on the necromancy, the Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah.
I'm willing to give a partial points for that in this game that is totally made up and the points don't matter.
Yeah. What's our protagonist's name in the...
Brant Tucker. That's his name. So he's with some IPs next to a guy from the Necropolis Litharge.
Klaproth.
Necropolis means literally city of the dead. Litharge, do you know what that is?
No.
Litharge is lead monoxide. So it's basically lead rust. In panel 3, we have mention of the shadow of the Quinsy Mountains. Quinsy is the term for a paratonsillar abscess.
So all the places he's from are named after deadly things.
Yeah, deadly and weird gross things. Yeah. A paratonsillar abscess, also known as a quinsy, is a recognized complication of tonsillitis and consists of a collection of pus beside the tonsil in what is referred to as the paratonsillar space. So if you get tonsillitis and it gets infected and you get the space beside your tonsils filled up with pus, you have quinsy.
Quinsy.
Yeah. And those, that's what the mountains are named after.
What's a brougham? In the next panel he says, and the brougham in which my companions and I were traveling was washed into a river. Sorry, I should say in his voice. And the brougham in which my companions and I were traveling was washed into a river.
A broom, that's how it's pronounced, or brougham, was a light four-wheeled horse-drawn carriage built in the 19th century.
The brougham in which my companions and
Here's a picture of a broom.
Oh, it looks so cute.
Yeah. Little carriages, big wheels.
Imagine his was more like made with bones and stuff.
Probably. Or like at least decorated with bones for sure.
And in case you wanted to use protection while in this between the worlds place.
Yes.
That has both urinals and candlelight everywhere. Mm-hmm. They have Spartan quality goatskins.
Right. A play on Trojan condoms right there.
Mm-hmm.
Goatskins used to be what you'd use.
You can still get goatskin condoms.
Oh, yeah. And lambskin.
Lambskin. Yeah. They protect against they're porous, but the pores are too small for sperm to get through,
mm-hmm.
but not too small for viruses and things.
Right. So they're pregnancy protection only.
But not STI protection.
Right.
Yeah.
And at the bottom of the page, he does mention his name is Klaproth. Klaproth is actually a German surname. It's a family name. One of the most famous would be Martin Heinrich Klaproth, who was a German chemist, lived from 1743 to 1817. He actually has a lunar crater named after him. So there's a crater on the moon called Klaproth.
Hmm.
Yeah. And then we meet on the next page the person who will be telling us our story this issue.
Clurican.
Clurican, who we met in Season of Mists. When he delivered his sister,
yeah,
Nuala, to the Sandman.
He's definitely drunk at this point.
Yes.
And he begins by setting expectation for his tale very low.
Yeah, that's false modesty, right?
Yeah.
He likes to, yeah. It's also very, like, there's all sorts of things like that in Shakespeare. I think, is it Richard III? That when he's talking to the widow of the man he just killed, and he starts off his conversation with her with, "Oh, I'm not very good at talking. I'm just big and hunched over, and I'm only good at kicking ass and being a king and stuff. And my mouth was not formed for words." But then through that scene, literally seduces the woman who he just killed her husband. And by the end of it, he has her. So he's like, "Oh, I'm not very good with words." And by the end of it, he's like, "Gotcha," with words. Yeah.
Mm.
I think he's doing the same kind of deal. "Oh, no, I'm not a very good storyteller." Boom, story.
Mm. And also, I lack the ability to embellish.
Yes, I know.
He's a total liar.
He's a total liar.
Like, he lies all the time.
Yes.
Now, who's this woman that he's talking to?
We saw her in the previous issue. She seems to work with, or at least be very familiar with, the inn at World's End.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did we get her? They called her the landlady, actually.
Oh.
Clurican begins his tale and notes that it starts in the city Aurelian. Now, there was a noble family of Imperial Rome named Aurelius. You might know of Marcus Aurelius, who actually ended up becoming an emperor. Mm-hmm. That's how powerful that family was. So Aurelia seems to be modeled on that and Rome as well. We find out one of the characters' names is Carnifex. That's Latin for executioner. Okay. Literally means meat maker.
Cares Carnifex.
Yeah.
So this isn't a place in our world. This is a city kind of in another world.
Right. It seems that there are other lands. This might be like kind of a semi-fantasy world, like that fantasy Baghdad that Dream has.
Yeah.
Its own kind of realm in the same way that the realm of the fairy is that way.
These are humans mostly who live in this city.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they know who the fairy are and whatnot.
Yeah, it seems that way. This seems to be just kind of an alternate Roman world somewhere. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess there are all sorts of interesting fantasy lands to go traipse around in when you can hop through dimensions like the fairies can.
Yeah.
Yeah. The statue on this page, where it starts with the guy with what looks like the bare minimum of a toga and a little leaf over his junk raising his hand up.
Leaf.
That's pretty close to the statue of Julius Caesar outside the Forum in Rome, although he's got more clothes on and is bearing a little staff. I'll put up an image of that in the show notes at thedreaming.motivedust.com so you can take a look at it.
So, the 8th temporal emperor of the plains, Carus Carnifex, eventually his house, which his tomb, became the house of the rulers who take on his name. And Carus Carnifex, they're the rulers, like they're the ruling class, the lord or whatever, king of that city, lord of that city. That's how that works. Took me a little while to figure that out as I was reading this. I was confused. I also, when I read this the first time through, thought that they were in that city, like the queen was living in that city.
Right, but yeah.
Because it feels like the same place.
Yeah. Now, I have the Sandman companion book in which the author, Highbender, researches a bunch of stuff, but also interviews Neil about each issue and stuff like that. Neil really feels like this issue didn't work that well. And the main reason it didn't work was it probably needed about twice as many pages to get pulled off. And so I think what's going on here is he's trying to get this big thing about, okay, here's some backstory about what Aurelia is. I'm trying to set it up for you. And also, oh shit, I got to have Titania talk to him and send him on his way.
Yeah.
So the whole thing gets really compressed.
It just doesn't feel like where Titania is a different place from the shot they show us. Like, I understand why they show us the before and after of the city of Aurelia. But maybe if the city of Aurelia, if the before and after had happened after this conversation with Titania, maybe, then visually we would have seen the before and after right next to each other.
Yeah.
But yeah, for some reason, it just seemed weird.
Yeah, I would have probably tried to flip the two. That he should have started off being summoned by Titania, and then she could have talked about the city of Aurelia.
Yeah, well, especially because it's showing the city, and then it's talking about the palace at the top of it, and then we shoot right to this royalty. So I just assume we're going up to that. That was why I was so confused. Anyway, I got it eventually. Queen Titania, as she's depicted in this story, 100% would want to cosplay her.
Yeah.
She looks super cool. I like how her dress is like also kind of pants. Like it's all sort of combined.
Oh, yeah. She's got it like wrapped right up around her her feet even.
She's got like wraps. And then I think the dress kind of hangs down the back maybe in those wide sleeves. But also like her flower buns.
Mm-hmm.
Super cute.
Yeah, this is cool. So she has a job for Clurican.
Yeah, she's going to send him in on his own to go and make sure that an alliance isn't formed between the ruler in the city of Aurelia and the people, I guess, in the plains, so the people surrounding Aurelia. She doesn't want there to be a strong alliance in this particular city, and she doesn't say why.
She doesn't want an alliance of the cities of the plains. So Aurelia is one of the cities of the plains. Aurelia of the plains, and she doesn't want all of the cities to ally together.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she notes also that the Lords Carnal of Aurelia have requested that they send an envoy to a summit. So they have actually requested the fairy send an envoy to this summit that they're going to talk about becoming allied together. Clurican says, well, I wanted to go see my sister.
He's been putting off for a long time.
Yeah, I'm sure he's just looking for a reason to not do it.
Right.
He didn't really want to go see his sister because he could have done that almost any time he wanted.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so this next part really made me laugh. So when he gets back to his house, the queen has sent him three scrolls. One of which is the scroll saying that he's the envoy and that he's protected. The second is a map of where he's going. And the third is just a dossier on the politics of the region, how things have changed. Because like he says earlier, he had been there like 1,000 years, 1,200 years previously.
Yeah.
And had gotten in some trouble, apparently. but he hadn't been there since. So, you know, in 1,200 years, politics can change, and he doesn't know anything about it. And he says, I resolved to read it when I had the time.
Yes.
Dot, dot, dot. So he doesn't read the one piece of intelligence that would be interesting for the next little bit. Mm-hmm. But what I think is might actually be happening in how he's telling this story is that maybe when it all happened, Clurican did read that and went there prepared, knowing what was going on. But in the telling of the story, he recognized when telling the story that him sitting down and reading a scroll and finding that stuff out was a boring way to tell the story. And what's more interesting is for him to discover this place is different than he thought, and then discover along the way, and then literally have a guy come to him in the night discreetly to tell him more.
Yeah.
That makes a way more interesting story than him showing up prepared with the knowledge of what's going on in this place. So maybe he chooses to tell this story that way instead of the other way.
I would agree with you. Clurican is an untrustworthy narrator.
Yeah.
Yeah. He could have said it just so that it seems like when he gets things right, it was lucky rather than, yeah, I of course studied what my queen gave me. But she does note on the page before that she does wish her ambassador were not quite so feckless.
Yes. I think it could go either way. I think he could have read the dossier and that's how he knew it was going on. Or it could have gone the way that he described it, which makes a much better story. And he is trying to tell a convincing and good story.
Yeah.
So
in panel 4, he calls her Queen Mab, calls himself a representative of Queen Mab. That's a traditional title for Titania as well. It's actually used by Shakespeare. Romeo and Juliet, Act 1, Scene 4.
Hmm.
So he heads off, and there's notes of some adventures along the way.
There were no guards on the city gate, and I rode in unchallenged between a party of spice merchants and a couple of priests on mud-bespattered and malodorous donkeys. Aurelia of the Plains was, alas, no longer as I remembered it. The roads were thick with filth. Here and there a house had collapsed into the street, unrepaired and unremoved. The city looks like ruins.
Yeah, it's falling apart. And he's met by someone who's been waiting for him. Asks him, "Are you on the way to the palace of the Psychopomp?"
Psychopomp!
Yeah. A psychopomp is a word used to describe a creature, spirit, angel, or deity in many religions whose responsibility is to escort newly deceased souls from Earth to the afterlife. So a Valkyrie would be a psychopomp, right? Because the Valkyrie pick up the souls of dead warriors and bring them to Valhalla.
And so the robe dude is Brother Cabriolet? Cabriolet?
Cabriolet.
Cabriolet. Sounds like wine.
Yeah. A cabriolet is a car with a roof that folds down, or a light two-wheeled carriage with a hood drawn by one horse.
So the brother...
it's a convertible carriage.
Who's going to escort him is named after a carriage.
A convertible carriage.
Yeah. Because he doesn't have any hair.
Yeah, it could be.
The top's off.
Yes.
He asks a favor of the fairy.
Mm-hmm.
"My lord, I was supposed to meet you at the city gate. It would be a kindness were you to allow his grace to believe that this had occurred."
Well, I certainly wouldn't want to get you into trouble. It's an interesting little thing that happens.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the first step in showing that this leader is trouble, maybe.
Mm-hmm. And he finally meets him, and he is overweight and gluttonous, and it looks like covered in pimples.
Mm-hmm. Getting a real Henry VIII vibe from this guy.
Yeah, definitely an over-the-top hedonist.
Well, especially because I think there's a parallel with the Henry VIII thing, in that when he declared his own Church of England, he made himself essentially the head of it. So he became the religious leader and the leader of the country at the same time. So there's maybe more of a Henry VIII parallel as well.
Yeah.
On the way in the door, there's a bunch of people, and they're petitioning for help from the royals, from the Lord in some way. And they've obviously not been listened to very much. They seem very desperate. Some of them have been waiting for a long, long time.
One of his advisors is saying that the folk of the plains are poor folk and they won't stand for another tax. He says, "Oh, it's not another tax. It's a ticket to a pain-free afterlife." So he's basically abusing the fact that he is both the temporal and religious leader.
Mm-hmm. He's taxing them and saying that if they don't pay, they won't go to heaven.
Right. Because that's his job, is to be the one who escorts everybody's souls to heaven. That's kind of this pope's job.
Yeah.
They don't call him a pope, but he's basically a pope. psychopomp of the Universal Aurelian Church.
Am I not their spiritual leader? Am I not also their temporal lord?
You are the temporal lord solely of Aurelia, one city only.
True, but I am psychopomp of all the planes, and they will do as I see fit.
Right, so this is some, again, lots and lots of information being crammed into some pretty obvious exposition here.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to let you know that probably the reason why things are falling apart is because the natural order of things is upset.
Oh.
That you're supposed to have one person be the psychopomp, and then one person lead each of the cities. And here you've got the psychopomp also being the leader of the city, and he's just totally abusing that power now.
One psychopomp and one carnifex.
Yes. Well, one carnifex per city is what it seems like.
Mm.
But there are multiple cities. Well, Lord Carnifex, maybe the cities don't call them Carnifex, but yeah,
yeah, Lords this particular of the city. One is the Carnifex,
yeah,
of this city. Other places might have a different name, but Aurelia's Lord is also takes on the name Carnifex.
Yeah.
Complicated it politics is. Of a made a place yeah. in a little comic.
Right, exactly. He offers Clurkin a girl or a boy, and he says no, which is kind of out of character.
Yeah, I mean, these are filthy mortals.
Yeah, you just care. You can get a pretty one.
I guess. But would that king give him, or would the Carifex actually send him a pretty one, or would he send him, you know, like, yeah.
It's probably that he just doesn't trust him, yeah.
Yeah, and he's got sneaky stuff to do. He's got rogue stuff to do.
He does.
Which is what he gets up to as soon as the door's closed.
Yeah, he sends a letter, and in the PS gives the actual good information. The new psychopomp of the plains is also the physical ruler of Aurelia.
Yeah, read your friggin' dossier.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's probably in there, I bet. The queen probably rolled her eyes so hard. Like, I'd love to have a scene of her opening this and just, like, head desking so hard. Mm-hmm.
This bat that shows up, this is, like, the fairy version of their high tech. This is how they do instant messaging. So I'm declaring that this bat's name is Flitter.
Flitter. Well, it has a little, he makes a little.
I was thinking. That's how he whistles for it, yeah. But yeah. I think the bat goes.
It flitters.
It flitters.
Bats fly pretty quietly, but yeah.
Not Flitter. Flitter lets you know he's there. Hey, you got a message for me? I'm Flitter.
Mm. But I like that he blows some kind of tune.
Yep.
He plays some kind of tune, whistles to get the bat to come. But it's written in like, those aren't regular music notes. They're like kind of stacked over each other.
Yeah, I think he's doing, is that a chord or like, what's that called? Multi-harmony or whatever?
No, I mean, it's two sets of eighth notes that are put not actually lined up in ways that you would line notes up. And then a singular that's a 16th note next to it. And then like a dash to them. Those things don't make sense. I mean, they're just notes.
They don't make sense to your mortal.
That's what I mean, is that maybe to fairy music, when he whistles, he can do that.
Of course.
But instead,
can.
It just like it's just a bunch of they're just regular. All right, that's not those are eighth notes. They're just kind of stacked above each other, those two. And then so anyway, it doesn't matter. They're just interesting. It's just fun little music notation that's been stuffed together to look fancy. And he strolls back in, and there's this moment where there's this guy asking to get into his room.
Yeah.
And Clurikon just walks straight between the two of them because he can't be seen.
Yep. Because he walked right out in front of that guard as well.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just, he's using his glamour. You can't see me.
Yeah. And then he comes back out and pretends to know the guy.
I heard voices. Yeah. Pretends to know him. Turns out he is Otho of the Plains, who is the uncle of Karis. Called him Nephew Mehron.
Mehron?
Mm-hmm.
Psychopomp Innocent VI.
Yeah.
Or Carnifex Karis the 35th. Depends on whether he's holding the keys to the afterlife and has the power to escort you to heaven or hell, or whether he has the power of life and death over all the fleshy bodies in Aurelia.
Mm-hmm. And we get driven home more here that it's bad that it's the psychopomp is also the Lord of Aurelia.
And now Marion's made it to the top twice. He wants more. He's the spiritual leader of the entire plains. He's also the Carnifex of Aurelia. And if he can unite the cities of the plains, then he would have complete power.
Mm-hmm.
And the uncle wants, like, when asked what he wants.
Mm-hmm. Where do you stand on this?
He basically wants a lord who gives a crap about the people he's governing.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants a pope that cares about the actual religion, which they have neither.
Yeah, the Holy Twins. That's probably a reference to Romulus and Remus, who, in legend, founded the city of Rome. So Aurelia probably has a similar story, and it's probably one of the basis for their religion.
Yeah.
Now, what that guy says means that he's basically saying, listen, I'm on your side.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how much he knows that Queen Titania doesn't want this alliance of cities to happen, but now Clurican knows that this guy also doesn't want it to happen, so he might be able to help.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's basically, I'm going to show up, I'm going to tell some stuff to a fairy, and hopefully this fairy can get shit done, because fairies are basically superheroes compared to us. Right?
Yeah, I mean, he's invisible, he's a great fighter.
Yeah, they don't know everything that fairies can do,
right?
But they know fairies can do stuff. So mm-hmm. you find out a fairy's showing up and things are dire, you just go and you whisper the right things in the fairy's ear.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, should you also agree with me on this, we could work together.
Yeah.
So the next page is a big explanation for the weirdness that happens on the page after.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool, but the general thing is like, yeah, mostly we're glamour, but sometimes we'll say true things, and these things we say are neither glamour nor magic, neither prediction nor curse, but sometimes what we say is true. Even if you're a tremendous liar like myself, it's even true for me. So he's setting up this brand new kind of power, weird power that the fairies seem to have.
That's outside of his control.
Yeah, he can't control it. My guess is, there's no evidence for this, but I think Titania did this. I think she's his lord and she can just go, oh good, now's the time to do it. I don't really care what happens to Clurican. I hope he can figure himself out. This
right.
should mess everything up. That's my guess. I have no evidence for this. I don't know something from the future. It just feels right.
Yeah, and so he can't control it and suddenly it comes out of him.
Both Psychopomp and Carnifex, you've gained great heights through death and lies. But now the dead begin to rise, and death's forgotten time collects. The dogs will chew your carcass yet. Amidst your bones the rats will romp, and even history shall forget you, Carnifex and Psychopomp.
There was a moment of silence then in the great hall. You could have heard a silver pin drop to the marble floor, and I thought to myself, oh, shit.
Bring him here. I don't like you, fairy. I don't like the idea of having to explain to the next ambassador your queen sends us that I was forced to execute her last one. But her realm's a long way away, and I've 100 people here will testify your sacrilegious insults. What's she going to do then, eh? Bring you back to life?
And he notes that the last time, 1,000 years ago, one of his kind, another fairy, caused a great deal of trouble in the city. They tried to lock him up and he walked out of his cell like it wasn't even there. So they learned a few things, cold iron. Wasn't it about 1,000 years ago was the last time?
1,200.
Yeah, 1,200. You know, that's about 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Clurican noted, yeah, kind of remember I had to get out of there really quick, caused some trouble. He's just repeating himself. That was him last time. He was the one that got captured and then just walked out of there that like there was nothing. So they learned cold iron
mm-hmm.
is what can hold a fairy. What I don't understand is he threatened to kill him and said, she can't do anything about it. And all these people heard you say that garbage. And then says, now we're going to lock you up. I don't understand why he's not dead. Maybe he's going to do some big execution. Is that what's going on?
Maybe. I think he just wants to torture him a bit.
Yeah.
I don't know what those threats were about, fairy. But when all this is over, I'll pop out your eyeballs with my thumbs and piss in the sockets. This I swear.
They weren't threats, Marin. That was a foretelling. This I swear.
And he spits on his face and it's green.
Yep. And a guard points out, Yeah, that thing with the eyeballs and the peeing in the holes. I've seen him do that. Does that. And in his cell, Chlorican falls asleep. And when he's asleep, he starts dreaming, and he dreams that he is fully clothed and not beat up, mm-hmm. and meets his sister, Nuala. And in his dream, I guess he gives her a glamour because she doesn't look all plain here.
Yeah, she looks all fairy fancy.
Mm-hmm. And he insists, no, it's okay. I'm fine. Can't do anything. It's cold iron. I'll figure it out. And she says, no, I'll go get help.
Yeah, because she can't come there and undo his bounds because right. she's also a fairy.
Yep.
But and then who shows up?
Dream with a pretty snazzy hairdo.
Well, this is the dream of elves. He's got the elf eyebrows. The same eyebrows that Queen Titania has. Like Spock eyebrows.
Oh, yeah.
He's Vulcans.
Mm-hmm.
Vulcans are basically elves.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. They are in my role-playing game.
And so he shows up. He makes it super clear that he's not doing this for Clerican. Yeah. He doesn't give two shits about Clerican. He only cares about Nuala and doesn't want her moping about because her brother's dead.
Which is cool because, like, the I don't really care if you die or not thing, that's totally Dream. That's so Sandman. But the I actually care about Nuala is really kind of new.
Yeah.
Like, he's only had her as a servant since the Season of Mists and has barely, like, encountered her at all. But he's had a few little tender moments with her. It's been really nice.
Mm-hmm. So he breaks his bonds and he opens the door. He offers to take him away, but Clerican's not done yet.
Yeah, he's like, nah, I got stuff I got to do. I'm a superhero fairy in a town full of people who don't know what I can do. And he sets to work because not only can fairies seem invisible, they can also look like other people.
Which is what he does. In the next montage, he dresses up, essentially. He uses his glamour to look like a bunch of random people.
Mm-hmm.
And he besmirches the name of... Lord Douchington.
Yes, Lord Douchington.
And in a couple ways, basically calls him a bad religious leader and a bad leader.
Mm-hmm. And also that he was going to, that whole deal that they were going to have with the other cities, he was like selling out the entire city into slavery in order to cover his own debts. So you can't even trust that alliance that they're working on. This is all bogus.
Through the power of gossip, this fairy takes him down.
Yep.
I kind of love that.
Yeah.
And so the people are rioting.
Yep.
And the king and his trusted advisor, Brother Carriage Face.
Brother Convertible.
Brother Convertible Carriage. They head off in hiding because Lord Douchton doesn't actually think it's that big of a deal. He's just like, we're going to hide out.
He doesn't because he notices that one of the things that was said was not true. Right? That they say that your predecessor, Karis 34, appeared to the multitudes and announced that you had him poisoned. Lies! And that the treaty was a forgery. Enough! We find out later he didn't have him poisoned because the guy had terminal cancer. There's no point. It'd be a waste of poison. So that's why he's like, oh, this won't be a big deal. We'll just wait it out because none of it's true.
Yeah.
I'll be fine. So he goes down to a safe room, which is, remember we heard early on, that it was the giant tomb became their seat of government.
Yeah.
So he's down in the tomb beneath this large government / church of the plains.
And he specifically points out the body of his predecessor, 34. Good old 34.
Yep.
Why would anyone poison a man with terminal cancer? Waste of good poison. I've changed that accent like 3 times now.
It's fine. At least it's not Pixar Scottish. Aren't you scared, Your Grace?
Scared? Not likely. I know the folk of Aurelia, a foolish, confused rabble. They don't have the will to rebel. When the sun rises, they will creep back to their homes and hovels, abashed and ashamed. I will wait here while they riot, and then I will walk through the city with my palace guard beside me. And in my role as Carnifex of Aurelia, I will pronounce sentence of death on every 10th man. While as the conductor of their souls, as the church's leader, I will damn all their souls to eternal cold and dark. and I will find out who is responsible for this insurrection, and I will...
Pop out their eyeballs with your thumbs and piss into the open sockets.
Yes.
Your Grace, I know who caused this evening's shenanigans.
Who? I want to know his name.
The Clericana Fairy. Me. Didn't anyone ever tell you it's bad luck to cross the fair folk? And then, kind of a, with no explanation of how this happens, the body of his predecessor rises up and throws him out the window.
Defenestrates him.
Yeah. Now, an odd thing here is he throws him out a window, but he went down into a trapdoor to get into this room.
Unreliable narrator.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that this death might be a little off. Maybe he doesn't want to say that he killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure. That fulfills the dead begin to rise and debts forgotten time collects.
Mm-hmm.
And he says he had a invigorating sword fight with a palace guard on the way out. Very Errol Flynn pose there.
Mm-hmm.
Grabbed
his
stuff.
He's kicking an urn at him.
Yep. He sees Karis at the bottom, nephew Maron, he calls him. The dogs are chewing off much of his face, and soon rats will be clambering through his ribcage. Of the dead Carnifex, there was no sign.
Thriller night.
And I was on my way home when this damnable storm blew up, and the way between the worlds became impassable.
He admits that he came up with the sword fight in the palace.
It was a boring, insipid narrative.
He may have omitted some things, and he may have lied and whatnot, but our two earthlings are humans from Earth. They don't believe a word of it.
No. On this page here, the bottom left panel, somebody says, "And this queen of yours, was she happy with the outcome?" There's two people standing there we haven't really seen before. Those are references to two old DC fantasy characters. They're kind of obscure, named Claw the Unconquered, who's kind of a Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah, he looks like it.
And Stalker the Soulless.
They're the guy with no pupils?
Yeah.
Still no explanation for the monkey with the colander on his head,
I'm not sure who the orangutan with the colander on his head is, yeah.
Because he references him earlier when he goes into the bathroom. He's like, "What is that?"
Yeah.
And we don't get an answer.
Yep. So, whose tale is next? All right, what'd you think of this one?
I liked it.
Yeah, it's one that I kind of agree with Neil. It kind of fails. Like, it's a little complicated. He's trying to get a lot done.
Yeah.
I find that once I really read into it, started looking at other things up, I enjoyed it more. But you can't really lightly skim this one. You have to really...
Yeah, there's a lot of reading. There's too much exposition to get through. And it's the way in which it's told is confusing. So
yeah.
Two reads was necessary, which isn't ideal, I think, of a comic.
Yeah.
And just ineffective storytelling at times.
Mm-hmm.
But also the core story itself feels like something out of The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Which I'm loving. It's just everything about it, the rollicking adventure, the guy who's the good guy, but he's got all these hidden talents and stuff. Mm-hmm.
And how he doesn't kill the Carnifex himself.
He doesn't kill anybody.
No, he just spreads gossip.
At least in the way
people.
He tells the story.
Yeah,
he doesn't
exactly,
kill anybody.
Exactly.
I liked all of that. I also very much liked the art style of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Not the one that continues on throughout all of the issues, but this particular one.
Yeah.
I thought it was super effective. Mm-hmm. Made all the elves look super pretty. Or the fairy looked super pretty, and it made the humans look nasty pants.
Yeah. Okay, prediction time. Our next issue is called Hobb's Leviathan. Do you remember Hobb?
Isn't Hobb Puck?
No.
Is that the name for Puck?
Sort of. Puck is a hobgoblin.
Yeah, okay.
And that's because Hobb is a short name for Robin, and Puck is Robin Goodfellow.
Okay, so wait. So
Hobb, he's Hobb the Goblin,
Hobb
so he's
a
hobgoblin.
Hobb is the guy who lives forever?
Yes, Hobb Gadling.
And his Leviathan.
Hobb's Leviathan is the name of the story. Now, Hobb is not telling this story. I can tell you that. He's not at the inn.
It's a story being told about Hobb.
Sure.
Or that features Hobb in some way.
Is that what it is? So what's it about? What happens?
Well,
this is prediction time.
I mean, a Leviathan is isn't it kind of like a sea creature?
Yeah.
But a biblical sea creature?
Yeah.
Sort of?
Usually, yeah. It can mean giant sea creature, but it's Leviathan is also very specifically biblical, yeah.
Hob wasn't a slaver, but he did run boats. He was against the slave trade. He was a shipping master, wasn't he?
No, he ran the slave trade.
I thought he was against it.
Well, he had slaving boats, and he was like, it's so easy. You make so much money. You go here, you pick up the slaves. You drop them off here. You pick up cotton. You bring that to England, and then you get money, and then you go back and you buy more slaves, and you repeat the whole thing. It's so great. And then 100 years later, he felt really, really bad about it.
Okay, I think it's related to that.
Okay.
Because that's a period of time in which he was in the ocean, and maybe Leviathan means also like this thing he's struggling with about either slavery or about maybe something he does after slavery to try to change the harm he's done. I don't know. It's something related to that. I think Leviathan kind of means is going to be a little bit nautical themed, but also like the monster is not like a giant monster in the ocean. It's like the monster of something he has to deal with, like that's a complicated situation.
Okay. I guess we'll have to find out next episode.
You've been dreaming of The Sandman, Issue 52, World's End, Chapter 2. For show notes, visit thedreaming.motivedust.com. Support future episodes at patreon.com/thedreaming, and we'd sure appreciate it if you'd tell your friends about us. Our theme music is Oneri by Kai Engel. Hear more at kaiengel.bandcamp.com. The Dreaming was recorded in Burnaby, British Columbia, Canada, on the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, Kikate, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. I'm Joe Foljam. Thanks for listening. Time to wake up.